and I want to welcome you back to the Atlanta Sports Weekly Podcast. As always, my name is Alex Adams, joining you here today. And before we get into any Atlanta sports coverage, we want to cover some of the other major sports in America. And with that being said, we need to get into the greatest two words in all of sports, Game 7. Game 7 is coming up in the NBA Finals Sunday night between the OKC Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. After the Indiana Pacers took a 108-91 win in Game 6, but this game was anything but close. Indiana really took control of the game headed into halftime. They won the second quarter 36-17 and eventually took a 30-point lead into the fourth quarter, and that was all she wrote as the Thunder could not mount a Indiana Pacers-style comeback. And we head back to Oklahoma City and Paycom Arena for Game 7 Saturday night. Kind of impressive showing here from Tyrese Haliburton playing on that bum calf. He injured it in Game 5, but came out kind of wobbly for his standards. Yesterday night, only scoring 14 points and having 5 assists in 23 minutes. The Pacers likely limiting his minutes heavily in that second half when they didn't need him as much, trying to let him rest up for what will be a winner-take-all Game 7 in OKC. And then the other big news in the sports world was the Florida Panthers, who won the Stanley Cup. So congratulations to the Panthers. They destroyed the Oilers in that last game of the series 5-1, and what was just a pretty easy win for the Panthers. Just no qualms about it necessary. Now they have back-to-back titles down there in Florida with the Florida Panthers. So congrats to the Florida Panthers. But now for what we all came here for, the Atlanta Sports Talk. And as I, you know, just saw Acuna hit another home run. Jokes, but, you know, wouldn't be shocked. As Acuna has been on an absolute tear recently. Last night, notwithstanding, when he went over 3-2 walks. And really, the Braves might... Are they back? Is it too little too late for the Braves? They are now 10 games back of the Mets. They did pretty easily almost. For the last two games of the series, it was pretty simple for the Braves. But that first game Tuesday, walk-off winner, sack fly from Austin Riley, scoring Luke Williams from third in the 10th inning. Two nights ago, it was Chris Sale's masterful 8 2/3 innings. I know the fans did not like when Snicker walked out. It was met with a chorus of boos, but it was the right call by Snicker. You do not want to have your ace of the staff. Sale was already at 116 pitches. He's 36 years old. Don't really need to get Sale hurt in June. You much rather save him for what you hope is a long and fruitful October and November playoff style baseball for the Braves. As this weekend, they are taking on the Miami Marlins. And what Braves fans hope is a continuation of what they did up here in Truist Park in Cobb County. Of course, Miami, they're going down to Miami this weekend, so we will see how that goes. And then they take on the Mets again in Queens, New York, for a four-game set next week. starting on Monday, going till Thursday. And then they have the Phillies, those dreaded Phillies, at the end of the week at home back here in Cobb County. Starters for the Braves, projected starters for the week. Tonight we have Didier Fuentes, who the Braves actually just called up from AAA, sending Jose Ruiz back down, or DFA'd him, which hopefully he never shows up for the Braves again. Watching him is quite scary. And then Saturday we have Grant Holmes. And then Sunday we have Bryce Elder. And headed into that New York series up in Queens next week. Swellenbach will get the ball Monday. Of course, those four games all being broadcast on FanDuel Sports Southeast or FanDuel Sports South. Tuesday's game is broadcast on TBS. We have Chris Sale pitching for the Braves again. Second straight start for him against the Mets. And then another second straight start against the Mets. We have Strider pitching, who was pretty masterful in that game yesterday in that 7-1 victory for the Braves. Strider went 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, only one run allowed, only one walk. Big news from Strider as well, getting his command back under him since that Tommy John surgery was nice to see. We saw him do it against Colorado, but we weren't entirely sure how it would translate to a better team like New York. And it translated pretty great. Strider did great yesterday. See if he can do it again next Wednesday when he faces the Mets again. And then to wrap up the series, Thursday against the Mets, MLB Network will be hosting the game, and Grant Holmes will finish out the series. So the Braves, since our last discussion, they won 2 out of 3 against Colorado, which isn't bad by any means. I mean, that was kind of the bare minimum that you needed. You would have obviously liked to have taken that third game, got that series sweep over Colorado, but 2 out of 3 was, I guess, okay. And then that sweep over the Mets was huge. The Mets went from 13 games up in the division on the Braves to only 10. And by virtue of the Braves' sweep over the Mets, the Phillies and the Mets are now tied at the top of the National League East. And they have a 3-game series starting tonight, which the winner of that series will gain possession, sole possession of the National League East. In the time being, right here, right before the 4th of July, would be nice for the Braves to pick up some games on both teams headed into what might be the All-Star break coming up kind of soon. So just need to build some wins as you are. This will be the second and third of the straight series against your division, Miami and the Mets, and then to end off with the divisional games right now, Philadelphia next weekend. So just look for more of the same from the Braves. Yesterday, kind of notwithstanding, they won 7-1, but 9 walks in the game. You're not likely to see 9 walks in a major league game. That's just not what happens. Matt Olson hit a pretty solid double to score 3 runs and kind of break the game open. And then I believe it was Ozzie Albies who hit a Singeye single for that eventual 7-1 victory for the Braves. Again, masterful performances by Chris Sale and Spencer Strider. 15 combined strikeouts between the two of them. And what a showing from Braves fans coming to the Battery. Two sellouts and about 115,000 fans over the three games, which is kind of insane when you think about it being a weekday series. You don't normally have, you don't see that a lot. And it's nice to see the attendance numbers are still up for the Braves, even in this kind of rut that they have been in. So we will see what they do this weekend. Now, moving on to some Atlanta Hawks discussion. I asked on my Instagram page if the Hawks should make a big play for a Giannis-type player. It's actually interesting to see. We had 100% of the votes, only three of them so far. I posted it yesterday on my Instagram at StrikerAlex2. Three votes all for yes, which kind of intrigued me. I'm not sure if I would, to be honest, go star hunting. You kind of just got yourself out of that rut. From trading away DeJounte Murray, you found a diamond in the rough, Dyson Daniels, number one overall pick. Zachary Richesche looks really good. Jalen Johnson can hopefully stay healthy. He has star level potential. And then you have Onyeka Okongwu down low. And to trade for like a Giannis or a Jaren Jackson Jr. type, it would probably require two of those players. And I just really like where this young core of Atlanta is at. It's going to be really nice to watch them grow here in Atlanta. Hopefully they can keep Trae Young around for it, as I think they have built something around Trae Young that is sustainable. All they're truthfully missing now is really a backup point guard to run the offense when Trae sits, and kind of that center that can go down low with the elite centers in the NBA and kind of put a body on them. And Onyeka Okongwu's not big, is not that, I don't think. He's only 6'9" or 6'10". Doesn't entirely have the muscle for those Giannis or Joel Embiid types. With his frame, I don't think he will. So just getting one of those bigger centers, I think will do this team wonders, which is why the NBA draft kind of intrigues me. There is a prospect in it from Duke, the 7-foot-1 Malik, who intrigues me as someone the Hawks could potentially target. I've seen rumors that the Hawks might try and trade up in the draft. If so, I feel like that might be the target. He is predicted to go probably top five in the draft, as the NBA draft is next Wednesday, the 25th of June at 8 p.m. The Hawks have two first round picks, one of them from Sacramento in that Kevin Huerter trade. They have that pick falls at number 13, And then they have the Los Angeles Lakers pick. Pick 22, I believe. That trade as a, or that pick as a result of the DeJounte Murray to the Pelicans trade. Of course, the Pelicans had that pick from when they traded Anthony Davis to Los Angeles. So the Hawks with two first round picks have the ammunition to trade up if they want to. I don't know if that could get them all the way into the top five. We'll kind of have to wait and see. Maybe Malik falls to 6, 7, 8, and that could be enough to trade up. But I guess we will have to wait and see there. But I think that Duke Center would be a great addition to this Hawks young core. 7'1", just very, very good size at the center position. Able to run the pick and roll with Trae Young. That would be lethal, kind of what we had when the Hawks had a younger Clint Capella and Trae Young, where they could just run pick and rolls and Trae Young could throw lobs to Clint Capella. And now we will move on to some Atlanta Falcons talk. Kind of interesting headed into training camp. The preseason just over a month and a half away. Training camp is almost here. I think it starts middle of July. And then the preseason actually, ironically, starts on my birthday for the Falcons, August 8th. So that'll be a fun little birthday present is getting to watch the Falcons if only on preseason. But getting into this Falcons talk and what the Falcons should have done with Kirk Cousins, I asked on my Instagram what the Falcons should have done with Kirk Cousins, and the majority actually agreed with what the Falcons did, keeping him on the roster. Out of the 10 votes that we had, six of them were to keep him on the roster. And then there were two votes each for cut or trade him in March. And the other two votes were for cut or trade after June 1st, but before the season starts. That would have been the June 1st one would have been after the veteran deadline, so you could have split it up over you could have split his cap it up over 2 years. But like the majority said, I agree with keeping Kirk Cousins on the roster. Because he can be a good mentor for Michael Penix. Penix is still, in my eyes, kind of a rookie. Only got three real games of run in the season. And he might hit a kind of proverbial wall once defensive coordinators can kind of plan around him. If that happens, it'll probably be middle of the season, because I don't think anyone has seen enough of Penix at this level to make any real definitive answers as to if they figured him out or not. Kirk Cousins is just a very professional guy, not going to create a lot of negative headlines or distractions. So keep him on the roster. And if Penix gets, God forbid, he gets hurt, you do have that good backup quarterback you can always turn to. Would be kind of awkward, to be honest. But that is an option that they do have. And then the other kind of question I had for my followers, was about the James Pierce deal. Now, the Jalen Walker pick, universally loved. Everyone thought that he fell to the Falcons, like, just he dropped. Carolina was supposed to take him at the 8th overall pick. They instead take Tet McMillan, which, I mean, pretty good pick by them. Get a big-bodied receiver for Bryce Young. But the controversy came when the Falcons traded up for James Pierce. They gave up a second and a third, as well as next year's first, for that 26th overall pick, which they used to take James Pierce. Now, a lot of analysts and fans, a lot of analysts really didn't like the move. And I can kind of understand why. Trading next year's first is placing a lot on the team to be good next year. And right now, it's just potential that they're going to be good. I think they're going to be good personally. But Atlanta hasn't been good really since really 2016, 2017. When 2017, last time they made the playoffs, 2016, of course, was that Super Bowl year. We won't get into what happened in that Super Bowl. I think we all know it by now. But yeah, so the question of if the Falcons, or if my followers would have made the trade up for James Pierce. 5 votes were for yes, 3 votes were for no. And I love the trade for James Pierce. I loved James Pierce at Tennessee. I loved watching him. I am a diehard Georgia fan. For those of you that don't know me, Georgia is my favorite college team. But I also like watching other players on other teams. James Pierce was one of those players, just game wrecker. One of the best edge defenders in the SEC last year, and really the past 2 years. His breakout was the year prior, last year. Still a very good season from James Pierce. I'm ecstatic about it. I know a lot of people were kind of skeptical about trading that 2026 first, and what I'll say to that is you don't have to think about it as you're not going to have a first next year. Think of it as you just use the first. You think of it as you just had 2 first round picks this year. That's really what you did. You traded that pick to have a second first round pick this year and take a player that you were probably going to draft at 15 if Jalen Walker wasn't there. I really think that James Pierce would have been the pick. And the Falcons brass really doesn't think of this team as a top 10 selection like most analysts are thinking the Falcons could be. They're thinking that 2026 first will be in the late teens to early 20s, which is right where you traded up to. So kind of a wash there if that happens to be the case. And the other thing that you have to think about with this trade is that Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris, they know that they need to hit the proverbial gas pedal on this season. If they have another top 10 pick this year, well, they don't anymore. They won't anymore. But if they would have, if they're not giving it away to the Rams, but if they would have gotten the 10th overall pick this year, they both would have been out the door. So They knew they had to make an aggressive move up. They knew that edge rushers have been the Achilles heel of this team really since I started becoming a fan in 2012. But really since that one flash in the pan season from Vic Beasley, you really haven't had any edge rush help. And that's what Jalen Walker and James Pierce are going to provide, hopefully going to provide to the Falcons in their Falcons careers. And now, last but not least, I want to get into some Atlanta United talk as the international sort of break for United has come and gone. Their last match, we went over last week, the 4-0 loss to NYCFC. Their next match takes place, ironically, the same day as the NBA draft, Wednesday, June 25th, against Columbus Crew, who are one of the top teams in the East. 31 points on the season for Columbus Crew. 8 wins, 7 draws, only 3 losses. Tied with the Philadelphia Union for the least number of losses in the Eastern Conference MLS. Of course, Philly still leading the East with 37 points, 11 wins, 4 draws, and 3 losses. In this match against Columbus Crew, going to be kind of interesting to see what this United team looks like. As in the past two games, they have been outscored 6-0. They were beat 2-0 by the Red Bulls, then 4-0 by NYCFC. Gonna be kind of interesting to see what changes Atlanta United makes to the squad. Really, I think you have to look at maybe getting away from a five-man back line. That's not how Atlanta United is built. With all of the attacking players Atlanta United has, they are going to be a team that is a high pressure, let's go on offense, let's go score goals kind of team. They're not really built to just sit back in a five-man defense and just try and play out the back. They're going to give up goals. We know this about Atlanta United. They're going to give up goals. They're going to try and score goals. That's just been Atlanta United's MO since their inception in 2016, 2017. It's just go, 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 pressure on, pressure on. Especially with these attacking-minded players that they got in the offseason. Of course, Lotte Loth kind of been relegated to the bench a little bit, unfortunately. Still have Miguel Almiron, Saba Lobdenice out wide, so should still be a attacking-minded crew. We just have not seen it over the past couple of games since that Orlando City when they won 3-2 and the 4-2 win over FC Cincinnati. So we will see what they do coming out of this quasi break next week, and we will discuss it next week. So stay tuned for that next week. We'll also get into Game 7 of the NBA Finals that takes place Sunday night. We'll get into that next Friday. along with everything else Atlanta sports related. My name is Alex Adams, signing off for now. See you next week.